Welcome to The Last American Vagabond. Thank you so much for joining me today. I have a very special guest, somebody in the field of work that I've really been interested to speak to for quite a while, for obvious reasons that you'll see in this interview and things that we've been covering on this show. And today, this is somebody who is a pulmonary specialist. And his name is Dr. Sterling W. Simpson, MD. And this is actually the first time that he has spoken out using his name. He's been talking about this stuff for a while under a pseudonym because obvious reasons. People are attacked, even if they're correct today, for speaking out about things that challenge the narrative. So first of all, thank you for being here, Dr. Sterling Simpson. And just praise for, or you know, respect for having the courage to stand up and speak at a time when it's obviously hard to do so. Thank you for being here.
Oh, no problem. Thank you for having me. I feel like, the truth needs to be told. And I'm frankly surprised there aren't more people like me doing the same thing. I mean, we're talking about people's lives. And it's not just the United States, it's worldwide. The falsehoods that are being perpetrated, it's not just the United States. In fact, it seems to me like Europe's a little bit ahead of us, but we need to, if you care about your patients and you're a healthcare provider, you need to do your due diligence and research and figure out what is truth and what is just being spewed at you by the mainstream media or by the CDC.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think any honest professional remembers do no harm seems to be something that just kind of falls by the wayside because fear or because politics. And that's where we see all this today. And so I completely agree. And really, I argue that it's not even about, I don't think the doctors ultimately should be the ones deciding what the truth is. I mean, they give you your opinion. And that's one of the things we're going to get into today, that this idea of informed consent is just kind of, again, fallen by the wayside because of all these things that are suddenly more important. It's interesting how you can have these foundational concepts of what we're talking about be immediately thrown aside because of some new thing that, you know, just people are battered with, as you were talking about. But let's start off today with talking about your background. For those out there, as I said before, there are people out there right now that are wondering, I mean, and rightly so, people that are inherently skeptical of anybody speaking out. And for obvious reasons, because people want to know, why would this person risk his career, speak out, say these things, knowing, as I said, and this is important, even if he's correct, is going to be attacked and disparaged and ran through the mud by the mainstream media. So for those out there wondering, first of all, you know, why you're choosing to do this. And then, well, first, let's go over your credentials and what your specialty is, and then let us know why you're speaking out today.
Sure. Yeah. I'm a medical doctor. I went to 4 years of medical school. I also have a master's degree. I did a 3-year residency in pediatrics and a 3-year fellowship in pulmonology at the Children's Hospital of Los Angeles. I've been practicing for about 17 years. And in answer to your question, you know, the first, do no harm. And so I got to a point in my career where I felt like I could not do that. And the system right now is set up, and I don't blame the physicians, I don't blame the healthcare providers, but the system is set up that if you question the narrative, so if you question the narrative of masks, or if you question the narrative of vaccines, you can't work. Your pay is tied to it, your evaluations are tied to it, and there's been a line that's been dug in the sand, you know, with healthcare providers, and you know, they're almost afraid, I think, to step away from the narrative, because, you know, it's not only them, it's these, you know, we all work for multi-billion dollar corporations. The mom and pop shops aren't there anymore. And I think if it were a mom and pop, they probably would get, you know, raided if they went against the narrative.
Oh yeah.
But you know, I deal with, you know, I've dealt with kids from premature babies to college age, and I would rather not work in a profession if I cannot, you know, if I can't stick to the do no harm premise.
Yeah,
that's plain and simple.
Absolutely. Oh, I mean, I think it comes down to the idea that what's more important to somebody in this position, to go along with what the collective says is the right thing to do, or to do what you believe is the right thing to do. Now, understand that there are times when a person may believe they're doing the right thing, but not be doing so. But that comes down to an idea of integrity. And if you believe something is the right thing to do, then you should stand up for that. And I believe in, from my perspective, and I think all the work that I've been doing, that it's very clear that the science supports the idea of some of the things we're going to get into today. And that's what I think is so incredibly strange, is they scream about the science and they're not really looking at the science. Yeah. But it's a commendable position to go against this kind of thing. And I want to just stress out there for anybody, because as again, there are going to be people that challenge anything that goes against the narrative. And the point being here is, this is a person who went to school, who you know, was educated in these practices, who was a specialist in pulmonary lungs. That's what it breaks down to. And so at the end of the day,
board certified.
Right. And at the end of the day, we should be listening to somebody's opinion because they've earned the right to speak on those things. And that's what's so incredible today. So let's start out with masks, because this is something for me that obviously it ties in with the idea of the pulmonary discussion. And, and first of all, do you believe from your experience, or what was, you know, before we got to the COVID scenario, do masks work the way that they're claiming they do?
Yeah. I mean, we've never used masks in this way ever in my career. So part of my career is it's part office, part hospital. I have never worn a mask in the office unless it's a really sick immunocompromised patient and there's a very, very special scenario, or they have a chronic disease. I've never worn a mask in the office. It's never been a protocol. I've even had sick patients come in. I've seen sick patients for, I don't know how many, I guess 17 winters now. I've never worn a mask and I don't get sick. That okay. You know, we would always tell the staff and patients, wash your hands, you know, wash your hands, wash your hands. Mask has never been a part of this. So when the mask narrative started to creep in, I remember when all this first started, because the CDC told us that, I don't know if people remember this back, but in, I believe it was March, they said it was airborne. They've gone back and forth a few times. They said it was airborne up to 20 feet. And they said it was suspended in the air up to 2 to 3 hours. So at that point, I hadn't figured everything out. I said, well, I need an N95 mask, which really isn't going to work because that only works partially.
Right. Which is one of the things I thought was so confusing in the beginning, is that it said, that's the one you should be using. But now we're finding out that the vent isn't even set up for the proper protecting your grandma, or how they pretend that works.
Right. Yeah. It only protects going in, not out.
Right.
So if I had it, I could just spew it everywhere for the patient. So that didn't make sense. And then, you know, if it were airborne and suspended, then it would be all over surfaces. So, you know, there was a point where I'm sitting in my office going, oh my gosh, this is, I don't even know why we're here. If this is a true pandemic, this is Ebola, if we're going to be, you know, dying left and right, we need to truly lock down. But then the money gets in the way, you know, and all of these corporations, these billion-dollar hospital corporations said, well, we can't do telemedicine forever. So let's just start bringing in patients and putting masks on them. And you know what? Let's not do N95 masks, because we don't have enough of them. Plus, we know that they don't really work in the manner that we're being told. It's only a one-way filtration system. Let's use dust masks. So we were provided dust masks, and on the box of the dust mask, it says is not for viruses. And a lot of them specifically said it's not for coronavirus, COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So then that, you know, okay, fine. So we start doing that, and hand wash. I started to realize that maybe this isn't quite as severe as they're telling us in March, because if it were, if you're going to the grocery store and you're touching things and we're exchanging money, this pandemic, this deadly pandemic, we would all have it. Half of us would be dead by now.
So from a doctor's perspective, just in a general sense, you very quickly picked up on the reality that it wasn't as severe as they were stressing. Let me ask you this, since you touched on it, and I do want to focus on the pulmonary aspect as your specialty, but since you touched on it, in regard to the idea of a lockdown, It seems interesting that we're getting to a point now where the science, and by the way, I said this in the beginning because there was science even then and studies and research on this topic that suggested that lockdowns are archaic and don't actually have the effect we thought. So do you feel there's a time in an extreme case where lockdowns are necessary? And if that's the case, what's the concern for constitutional rights and how do you work that out? Just from as a doctor and a person in general, how do you perceive
that? I don't think they would ever, I don't think they have a place ever in society, okay? Because they don't make sense. Locking people in their homes, but if you still go out to get groceries or you still go to the bank or you're exchanging money, you know, an airborne illness is everywhere. So lockdowns don't make sense. They don't really stop a spread of any disease. That's number one. It just doesn't make any sense. Number two, the side effects of the lockdown or the adverse effects of the lockdown, which I think we're seeing now, are so huge. So huge. You know, I have a big problem with this. You know, when I see videos of elderly being, you know, locked away in their nursing homes, or people died in hospitals without their family members. We have never done that before in medicine, ever. Even if someone has cancer, okay, they have cancer, they're on chemotherapy, they're immunocompromised, they're still allowed to have family members there. How did that change? So no, I don't think lockdowns work. I think that it obviously has caused job loss, depression, anxiety, suicide, drug use, alcohol use. And I saw it in my own patients. And this is when I drew the line, when I started to get kickback or blowback from telling kids, when I'm seeing kids, you know, kids having psychological issues because of mask wearing. They think, all right, we have told them now that just going outside of your house, number one, you are an infectious person. You can't talk to grandma. You're a potentially an infectious human being. You must wear this mask. You must wear it everywhere because the environment everywhere is that bad. It's potentially going to kill you. Do you know what that does to a 5-year-old or a 9-year-old? And so I started telling my patients, no, you don't need to wear it. You don't need to wear a mask unless you go to the doctor's office. You don't need to wear a mask. And people thought that was crazy. I stand by that.
Yeah.
What are we going to do this every winter? Are we going to do this every winter, every influenza, because every virus that comes out has a death toll. And so, you know, it's gotten to the point where people have lost common sense and it's really scary. And so I don't believe lockdowns work. I don't believe masks work.
Well, so
and I believe they've been studied, by the way, anyone who wants to refute that, I think it's been studied about 100 years.
Oh yeah. I'll be sure to include all the studies that we talked about and we'll probably touch on a couple today, but you know, you said there for a moment. So did you make some drastic changes in your career because of your realization of this whole situation?
Oh, I did. I don't believe I can practice medicine with today's rules. Cause I will not. No, number one, it's do no harm. And I don't believe I have a big problem with the lack of informed consent with vaccines, including the flu vaccine. I will not take a flu vaccine. I will not give a flu vaccine, and I'm not going to go with the mask mandate. So I found out pretty quickly. I just left on my own terms. If I have to do something else in medicine that where I don't have to compromise my own morals, that's fine. If I have to find a new career, that's fine too. Yeah. But there's no way, you know, I have kids too. There's no way they're going to see their father go to work just to make more money to try to weasel my way through the system so that I can still make a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's just not worth it to me.
Well, it's commendable. I mean, that's something most people wouldn't do, but so that's it. So you're still, I think I believe you said you were still practicing, but you're doing it at an individual level, right?
Right. Yeah. I'm looking into doing more like telemedicine, and I'm also looking into currently doing some natural medicine, which I have to, you know, learn. It's like learning from sort of starting at day one and relearning a lot of things, which I've been thankful to meet this amazing community that heals their patients with natural cures.
Right.
And I think that's amazing, you know? I'm going to head more in that direction.
It may be controversial, but I would argue that's, you know, that's the medicine I believe that's that's the idea that we should be driving toward today. And I've been saying that for a long time, but it's just been so controversial to even suggest that something that doesn't come from a bottle is going to, you know, it's going to hurt you, lack of side effects and so on, but that's for another day. It's so frustrating to me, but let's bring it back to the mask discussion. Cause I just wanted people to know that it's so important to see that somebody is literally making a choice that affects their bottom line, their finances, for the right reasons to go in a direction they believe in. That's just so rare today. But let's touch on the mask again. I want to know, what do you think are the negative health effects? Because this brings it into, you know, your specialty in regard to pulmonary issues and what I've been talking about for a long time. I mean, but for those that have seen this show, we've gone over ad nauseum the idea that these masks, every one of the random controlled trials show that they do not have a statistically significant reduction in transmission. They all say that, right? And then I've shown the NIH studies that go over the reduction in blood oxygen level and so on. So can you confirm that this is something that you've seen in the past, and why then are people screaming that that's complete fake news today?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that my entire career was built around not obstructing an airway.
Right.
Not obstructing an airway. And if you have a tracheostomy or if you have a chronic disease, you definitely don't want to obstruct your airway. And this is what people need to realize. Putting something over your face, okay, and I'm not so much worried. Yeah, I do. With the oxygen content, our bodies can handle fluctuations in oxygen. We can go climb a mountain or we can travel in an airplane and we have lower oxygen percentage in the air, but it's the rebreathing of CO2. And we know that as pulmonologists, that is a very sensitive and very acute change. You can hold your breath and the CO2 builds up in your body and makes your blood acidotic. That's the trigger to breathing. That is actually our trigger. So hold your breath. 30 seconds later, CO2 builds up in your body. Your blood becomes slightly acidotic and it triggers your chemoreceptors in your central brain to make you want to breathe. Okay. It's literally, and this is, I studied sleep medicine in my fellowship too. It's literally the reason for this billion-dollar industry of sleep medicine. It's because when people snore at night, they retain CO2. And the retention of CO2 has multiple effects. It has cardiovascular effects, gives people high blood pressure. It's also pro-inflammatory. So it's pro-cancerous, it's pro-infection. Okay, so that's for the even maybe the people with comorbidities. Putting a mask even on a kid or any one of us, if you have no lung disease, just the way it works is, I mean, it's like breathing in a paper bag, slightly less than a paper bag. You rebreathe, the gas gets trapped there. It doesn't all just disperse at once. And if you rebreathe your own CO2, you get a buildup. It also can make you sleepy, can give you headaches. And so these poor people and these poor kids that are having to wear masks all day and become acidotic intermittently throughout the day, that's a problem. And I think we have yet to see the long-term effects of the health problems that will come from a global population wearing masks.
Let me ask you this about the pro-inflammation aspect. Now, most people don't understand how important that is and how inflammation seems to be to tie back to almost everything that's wrong with us. So can you touch on that for a moment and why that's important, as well as the kind of the flight or fight response that gets triggered and that whole thing as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of, that's the number one basis on healthy eating and everything that you try to do in your life is you're trying to, almost every disease can be tied to being pro-inflammatory or slightly an inflammatory process, okay? So being acidotic is pro-inflammatory. All I can say is that being acidotic and knowing that we know all the diseases that have inflammation as probably a cause. I mean, it probably is, you know, all of the autoimmune diseases, the cancers, everything has a root. And when we say pro-inflammation, I guess we could say it's the activation of your immune system or the hyper excitability of your immune system. So it's that fight or flight state, but it's your body in a constant state where it feels like it's fighting off something. And then there's cytokines, and there's things that are released in the blood that are not supposed to be there in a healthy person unless you're fighting an infection. And so there's a lot of things that are released in your body that do fight infection, but they're toxic. But they, you know, that's why they can kill certain cells. But to have them floating around in your body at all times is deleterious. I mean, that's a known fact. Nobody can argue that.
One thing that I pointed out in the past in regard to the flight or fight idea is that your body produces cortisol when you start, you know, when you're in that situation. And what most people don't realize, and this is also just kind of a nod to our entire Western society, is that we find ourselves, you know, in work all day where you're afraid of your boss and you get in this created flight or fight response. You don't even realize that you're in for 8 hours a day. What people don't realize is that your body, your immune system stops, your hair doesn't grow, your body literally shuts down because it's defending the thinks against something. And I think we need to think about what's happening if you're walking around all day in that situation with a stressful life already.
Yeah.
And then you add a mask to it, you know, and then you it makes it even worse.
Yeah. And that, you're right. So that's where people need to tie this to that. When people say stress causes disease, I mean, stress causes disease because it's an excitability state, and you do get increased blood pressure, and you get release of cytokines, you get release of cortisol. And so yes, we're in a constant, you're in a work environment, you're in a stressful environment, and you're becoming acidotic. It's not healthy. Okay. So, and that's part of, if you're telling me a mask is good, okay. I haven't heard yet someone come out. I haven't heard a public health a figure, you know, that we have all these local governments mandating masks, and that's fine. You want to have a discussion about it, but we need to have a discussion about the downsides. That's informed consent. Let people, beside the fact that you can't, I mean, it's unconstitutional to mandate a medical device on people. Yes,
exactly.
What if all of a sudden they said, well, everyone needs knee braces. We're just tired of people falling or, you know, getting knee injuries. Knee braces. It's not going to hurt. I mean, what are you, you're going to fall and injure your knee. You're going to cost the health system money. You should do it because you want grandma to have good health care. They want the money, save the money for grandma. They could use the same virtue signaling for anything.
Excellent
point. Same thing, you know, and it's the same thing. It's masks and then vaccines. They did it. And the virtue signaling with the mask is the same virtue signal with the vaccine. So if you're healthy and you decide not to get a flu vaccine, well, I mean, but you should get it because grandma and grandpa, you're going to go visit them.
Yeah.
That's another. So we need to boil this all down. It's not just the United States. I think people here are a little spoiled. Thank God we're not in the UK where I have friends, or in New Zealand. This, you think this is bad? They're locking down these countries right now. Okay, for cases, for positive tests, and we can talk about that later. But they're not only just doing that. In New Zealand, and this isn't a conspiracy theory, it's a fact. New Zealand really is setting up quarantine camps where you have to get a test. If you don't get tested, you go to the quarantine camp for 14 days. That's, talk about constitutional rights. I mean, people, we're on the edge.
And I argue that those things are happening in those places because it's a testing ground. I mean, these are essentially vassal states of the U.S. government, as I see it, the way that they act and the way that they seem to signify where we're going down the line. You know, so it's, we're one step away from that, as you're saying, and I think that's absolutely true.
Yeah, I mean, I go so far as to saying, you know, everyone should have a right to say no to a medical device. Okay, you should also have a right to say no to temperature checks. Mm-hmm. That is a personal health information. Since when did we so quickly, how did we so quickly give up our health rights? That is protected private information. Because should we label everyone with HIV now? So if you're an employee, you're telling me I have to tell you whether or not I have a positive coronavirus test. Well, then he should have to say whether he has HIV or hepatitis. That's infectious. You know, it's insanity. So it boils down, and we have to get strict on this. It goes as far as your body temperature. And it's unconstitutional to check people's body temperature and base their life, whether they're going to be able to go into a store or go into work, based on their body temperature. What if they have a disease? What if they have low or high resting body temperatures? You're going to discriminate against those people? They're just it's tested every 2 weeks?
I think this precedent was set a long time ago, and it wasn't even just about, in some ways, in regard to biological threats, but we also see this with foreign policy and terrorism and this whole, the collective, right? We're not all, no one's safe until we're all safe is the same equivalent of, you're either with us or against us in regard to foreign policy. You know, it's it's this, it boils it down to an unrealistic metric that no one is ever always all going to be safe. That's why they say that, because it will never be reached, the same way that we don't end terror, whatever that even means, right? It's just, it's this unreachable goal. But we can see this precedent being set with, even with vaccines, with medical stuff, where in the past, at a time when, you know, people were less aware of these things were happening, and that's why I don't argue these precedents are fair or even justified, because they violate the Constitution, which technically means they're null and void, but they set these things in regard to forcing vaccines, or, you know, just arguing that everybody needs to be tested for the safety of the community or whatever. And so now they're pointing back to these things from like 1913 and kind of quietly arguing that they can do this if they so choose. So that's why I agree with you completely. It's very alarming that they're setting this kind of collectivism idea where we all have to be part of it, you know. And you touched on all these, the constitutional right aspect that is so important about masks or anything else, that there's a line that just can't be crossed right there, and they crossed it a long time ago. We need to realize that that's absolutely part of it. So could you touch on, you know, the, we're talking about the health aspects here and how
mask aspect, of course, that, you know, the other obvious one, the obvious one is that when you wear a mask and it's a warm, dark, moist environment, it creates bacterial growth. That is irrefutable, okay? And not everyone is wearing, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of mask you wear. Even if you wear a surgical mask, that's, you know, there's been studies that have shown after 2 hours of growth, 2 hours of wearing that in a sterile surgical center, you get bacterial growth. So nobody's washing their mask every 2 hours. So now that's with paper ones. Now we have all these people with these fancy masks or designer masks or just cloth masks. The bacteria and the molds and the fungi that grow on these things, yes, are going, you're rebreathing them. You're rebreathing that. And so what you're also doing is you're bypassing one of the your body's best mechanisms to protect you against stuff like that, your nose. You know, our nose is made with little hairs and a lot of mucosa to trap all these things before it gets down into your lungs. So what we're doing is wearing a mask, things are growing in it, and then we're sucking it right back down directly into our lungs.
Yeah, I'm just showing this. I've shown this study for a few times for people to recognize. This is one from the National Library of Medicine, the NIH. It says it's the only random controlled trial I can find about exactly what the doctor's talking about here. And it says quite plainly, moisture retention, reuse of cloth masks, and poor filtration may increase the risk. But it also says quite clearly that you can see that influenza-like illness statistically significantly higher with the control with cloth masks, even compared to the control arm, which is nothing, right? So the point being that cloth masks actually make you sicker even compared to not wearing anything. And I think that's what's so incredible, that that's just fake news if we talk about it today. You know, why do you think that is? Why are people so resistant to what they previously found in regard to official studies and so on?
Yeah, and it goes, you know, the biggest thing that I hear is, because there was a lot of propaganda about this, I don't know, coughing and spit, you know, protection. Okay, yeah. If you put anything in front of your face, it's going to protect or it's going to stop some spit and some large particles. But you know, that my favorite, one of the favorite videos I've ever seen is someone with a really good mask and then they vape and then it just comes out. This is what we're talking about, people. Talking about particle size, and so viruses traveling on small moisture particles that you can see, like your breath when it's cold outside, that travels through this mesh. It's like literally trying to protect yourself from mosquitoes with a chain link fence. And so that whole propaganda technique, that study, or I don't even know if it was a study, I think it was a meme, about protecting someone because if you cough, that the spit goes less. Well, yeah, we're not talking about spit. We're talking about an airborne virus, supposedly, which would travel on moisture particles that would float and go straight through the mask.
They even mentioned our aerosolized particulates, regardless of whether it's even airborne, as the term goes, right? So right. Your point's the same in any sense, right?
Any sense, of course. And then, you know, also, you know, what people won't see unless they do a little bit of digging is I'm not the only one saying this.
Right.
Redfield said this. He was in front of the Senate and he said, should you ever wear a mask if you're asymptomatic? And all he said, no. Fauci said the same thing. He said, it doesn't do anything. Plus, you touch your mask. And so he said, it might make you feel better. And yeah, it might capture a few spittle. He actually spoke truth then.
Right.
That's the truth. And also, you know, with all the focus on the mask and your breath, we've forgotten, people, what's the number one way, the number one cause of transmission of infectious disease? It's our hands. As we've been teaching our kids this for 100 years, it's your hands. And so unless you're washing your hands every 2 minutes, people wear their masks and they touch it. As soon as you touch it, that's a contaminated mask. You know, your hands. And if you touch your face, your nose, your eyes, then your hands spread viruses. This is what we've taught our kids for decades.
This is one of the things that really bothered me is this, how wildly irresponsible it was to roll this out without any understanding of how, like, this is what a lot of people are now saying as well, standing up and saying, look, that maybe these would have an effect, but people are touching them, they're reusing them, they're washing them, they're throwing them on their car seat. They don't understand this because nobody was ever taught. And I argue that even with that, with the points we made before, make that null and void. But nonetheless, I almost feels like actions they're taking were done in a negligent way, almost to drive more severity. I mean, that's my conspiracy theory opinion, but it seems that every action they took drove that way, you know, and it's just hard not to see that.
Yeah, it is, because they'll mention washing your hands, but it's sort of secondary. No, washing your hands is primary. And that's not just for coronavirus. That's for bacterial illness. That's for, you know, E. coli. That's for everything. It's your hands. They have done a huge disservice. And I mean, these are public health advocates. So they have to, it's their duty, not just to get the science right. It's their duty to explain this so that someone with a high school education can understand it. And they have failed to do that.
You mentioned the bacterial aspect. Have you heard any, I've been seeing some discussion very recently of the rise of bacterial pneumonia because of these masks, which of course have almost the exact same symptoms as COVID-19. I'm sure that's not being confused with each other, but any, have you heard anything about that? Any thoughts on the possibility of it causing pneumonia?
Well, I also want to touch on the fact that if you wear something on your face, you know, our face have staph bacteria, and that, you know, MRSA, everyone used to be at one point was afraid of MRSA, which is an antibiotic resistant form of staph that is on our faces. That's in the public. It's very common. Kids are getting staph infections around their face. That's a fact. It's just the same way as if it's why athletes sometimes, if they reuse things and they get sweaty and, you know, if you reuse something and if you create abrasion on your skin, it creates a nidus for infection. So there's that bacterial pneumonia. So, you know, there, I believe Fauci had a paper on just that, on bacterial pneumonia. This is what they're doing to spin it, though. So there's always a spin, because you can always look at something from two different sides. So what they're going to say now is, can breathing in bacterial colonies all day long cause bacterial pneumonia? I think the obvious common sense medical assumption would be yes. But what they're going to say is, well, no. That bacterial pneumonia was caused first by a viral infection that allowed the bacteria and allowed, because you do get that, you know, we do see that in medicine where you have a horrible viral illness. We see that with influenza, for example. Get influenza, you recover, and then you get a bacterial pneumonia. That's what they're going to say. But it doesn't, it still stands that inhaling bacteria and fungus all day that grow on your mask can't be good.
So let me make sure I understand this. So you're saying their only argument would be that it's caused, it starts because of the thing you have, but they're still saying the mask makes it more, it still makes it worse, right? Is that still the same point?
Yeah. So because even if you did get a virus and then you still wore the mask, so then you'd get the virus, you'd continue wearing the mask, and then you'd seed it with bacteria.
Or just the idea that the mask, simply because of the point you made, that it's continuing to, it can't help at the end of the day, and it's increasing the risk. And I think specifically in regard to the cloth mask is what we're talking about, and that's the important part, because that's what I think was something like 95% of people around the world seem to be wearing, is these cloth masks. It's incredible.
Yeah. Cloth masks and you know what? We need to change the narrative. I don't need to convince. It's not my job. How about you convince me as a health professional? You convince me as a public health professional that it's safe. Convince me. Because me as just your everyday Joe can say, yeah, man, my mask is filthy. Doc, is this okay to wear all day long? Convince me it's okay to wear all day long.
Right.
Okay, do it. And then don't say, well, you should be wearing it. You should be what? No. Convince me that the general population, with what you know of the intellect and the habits of the general population, not to put them down, but you know, not everyone has gone to medical school. Not everyone's gone to college. You tell me that they're going to follow that for now we're going almost a year. And then what are you going to tell me? We got to do this every year. So convince me. I want to see the papers and the studies that show that this is okay. Exactly. That you're not harming my kids wearing cloth masks or masks all day. And then if we want to talk surgical masks, I want you to also convince me that all of the surgical masks now, because the ones that were in where I live came from China. So you also need to convince me that they were made under safe conditions, that they don't have particulate matter on the mask that you inhale, and that they're not sprayed with anything.
That's a very important point in regard to even in the United States, by the way, whether they come from China or not. As I understand it, there's not even like a unified metric or guidance system for how they're supposed to like rate these. They just make a mask with some handles that look like the other ones, and they get sold. That's a reality, except of course for the ones that are medical grade, right? But that's the point. They make these kind of masks. We're talking about the ones you buy at Walgreens. Right. There's not something they have to reach. That's incredible.
Because it's not a real medical device.
Right, exactly.
It's not a real medical device. So that's why you can buy it at Walgreens or you can buy it at the gas station, because it's not meant to do this. Because if it was a true medical device that helps save your life, it would be regulated and tested. You know, so come on, people, this is like, you can't, if you get a little plastic thing and it's cute and it's got like stuff that you want to put on your kids and it's at the gas station next to the 5-hour energy, probably not a good thing to use.
Now, I want to let you finish your point you were saying, because your point about the particulates, which I covered on the show as well, is plastics or whatever else, but also spraying. So what were you saying about that?
Well, just what I've read is that, you know, these things, because they're trying to sterilize them. First of all, they're made in a non-sterile environment, period. Period.
That's incredible.
You know that. I mean, these are not, unless we're talking super medical grade N95 masks, these regular masks, it's just a factory with normal people who are touching everything, and God knows what the factory is like because they're not regulated. And so I think what they do is to make, they spray it with a chemical compound to sanitize it. And so then I need the health professionals or the companies to prove to me that inhaling this chemical over years now, because that's your plan, right? This isn't going to end. We're always going to have a viral season. So I need you to prove to me that over years of use, this isn't a cancer, carcinogen. Yeah. It's not going to harm me or my kids.
In New York, they already had an example of something like that, where they had masks that were treated with something and then they tried to justify it. But it's, who knows whether it was for what you were saying or for the excuse they made up for it. At the end of the day, it turned out to be dangerous and hurt people, right? So we just forget about those things, you know? It's incredible. It's an incredible point we can be at where we can see such, you know, they scream common sense and then there's none to be seen in this discussion of what they're talking about. You mentioned informed consent in regard to the masks. I think we went over that pretty well about the idea that, you know, people are not being given the opportunity to hear these concerns from, whether it's from a doctor, maybe whether they disagree or not, or things that have been clearly set and the studies have been talked about. But you also mentioned about vaccines and so on. So what are your thoughts on on informed consent in this regard? And why is it that this is just no longer something that doctors seemingly have to do, if, despite being a foundational part of our medical system, so we're told?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think for vaccines, informed consent involves not only telling you the potential benefits. So fine, you want to tell me potential benefits, which they should. They don't always do that either, but they should say, oh, this might, you know, it's a 30%. We all know the flu vaccines, for example, sometimes they're 30% effective, 40%, 60%. Okay, you need to first tell me that there's a high likelihood that this is not effective at all. Okay. And then not, and then the, that's the pro. The con, you need to tell me the potential adverse effects of this medication or injection. And so it's not just pain and soreness. You need to read me the insert. You need to tell me, even if it's a one in a million chance, right, that I could die from it, or that I could have a seizure, or that I could have an autoimmune disease, or that, I don't know, after the studies were done, that a laundry list of all of the top chronic diseases known to man have been reported. You need to tell me that. That is called informed consent. And then I could say, well, you know, you bring your baby in or your child for a flu vaccine. Well, maybe I don't, I need to weigh that. Do I need, want to get the flu that I don't die from, or that, that I'm very unlikely to die from as a healthy kid? Or do I want to have a chance of dying or having seizures or chronic disease? They need, people need to, that's legal informed consent.
Right.
And a medical assistant cannot do that. Yeah. They don't have the knowledge to give true informed consent to people. And I just don't, you know, in my own experience and in the experience, you know, people, I mean, I get people calling me and texting me and sending me information, you know, the amount of parents that have, you know, contacted me and saying exactly this, you know, if they had just said, if they'd given me a choice, and said, you know, I really think this is going to be beneficial. Your kid's not going to get A, B, and C because of this. This is the chance that, that this is going to prevent that. But there is a chance of seizure. There is a chance of autoimmune illness. There's a even a chance of death. We've already seen that in the coronavirus trials. Mm-hmm. You know, people, I'm not sure if the mainstream is covering it, but there's already been deaths. There's already been paralysis. Okay, so parents need to have that choice. That's immoral, and that's informed consent. And then fine, if you, you know, everything in life is a pro and a con. It's a risk benefit ratio that you need to figure out yourself, and that's fine. But people need to know the information.
Yeah,
and I don't think that's happening.
You can't make an educated choice if you don't have all the information. I mean, that's basic. And the idea that we're at a point now where it's been politically and social, you know, societally decided that these things are just for our own good, that we no longer have to talk about the potential side effects, despite the fact that we've got, you know, what is it, something now to $4.5 billion have been paid out in regard to the injury compensation court for vaccines. And, you know, these are realistic time. These are things that have been paid out, meaning that the court decided that that was at the very least too legitimate to talk about. You know, these, and the point being that, that liability was removed from these companies in regard to vaccines for children long before we got to COVID-19,
right?
So if you're outraged about the idea that they've already removed liability from these vaccines that are experimental and never been successfully done before and so on, then you should be outraged that we're here at all. You know, it's an incredible time to see. And I find it interesting that they're removing liability from these things, but not just from the vaccines, but even people who administer the vaccines or things that go along with the vaccines. That's like, I make this joke, which is kind of macabre, but if the nurse were to try on her way to give you the vaccine, trip and poke you in the eye with the syringe, she's got immunity from that, immunity from liability, which is just staggering to me.
Yeah.
But
good. I'm going to say, I don't know that even a lot of healthcare providers know this. And this is what they need to wake up for. I'll be honest. I didn't really know this. I didn't know the extent of the lack of liability. So then 1985, Vaccine Injury Act.
I think it was A6, but yeah, correct.
A6, yeah. Mm-hmm. Took away liability from these. So you have billion-dollar corporations that are not allowed to be sued. And then what do they take? Our taxpayer money, put it in a fund, and then pay out injuries. So that's part of informed consent. All right. So if people that think that, I mean, I think a physician or a nurse practitioner, anyone should be able, they should have this conversation. This isn't crazy talk. There's been billions that have been paid out due to vaccine injuries. So part of the informed consent on anything that's injected in you should be, well, yeah, we do have a history of some bad stuff happening with this. In fact, we have billions of dollars that have been paid out. And those are the people that had the time, energy, intelligence to go after it.
So which I'd is an impossible feat, even, you know, for even impossible. If you have everything you need, it's almost impossible.
Yeah, yeah, because you're basically, you know, I think you need information from the people that gave it to you right there. So that's, you know, difficult to get. So I would, I mean, it's got to be what, 1% of the actual injuries.
Right. And that's $4 billion. That's crazy. The one that stood out to me in there is that you have to prove to them that there's not a plausible alternative for why you have that. Think about how ridiculous that is. Just this unknown theory of anything that could be plausible according to the people that have a vested interest in making sure they don't pay you out. It's ridiculous.
And then we're at the point now, and this is, you know, kind of what I write about. It's that we have so many poisons in our diet through food. We come in contact with so many different things in our lives, and even kids have multiple vaccines. They're on medications. And so the interactions, first of all, let me tell you, people, these interactions are not studied. A vaccine is studied one at a time on healthy individuals.
So important.
Okay. They're not studied together, what the interactions are together over time. And so that gives them an easy out, because we're so bombarded with so many unhealthy things, including the medications, that it's impossible. It becomes impossible to tie it to a vaccine because, well, I mean, I've seen it in practice. Well, a baby, totally beautiful baby, and now they have seizures and they're on seizure medications. Well, you know, that just happens because unless it happened, you know, in the hours after the vaccine, they're just going to say, well, it's just coincidental. And there are effects that occurred that are not just right then, you know, mm-hmm. Autism doesn't just occur after one vaccine, maybe, but I can tell you, and this is the stuff that is not studied because it's frowned upon. We do have an epidemic of autism. We do. And we also have a tenfold increase in vaccines. Okay, maybe it's coincidental, maybe it's not.
But it's an honest question.
It's an honest question. We have more chronic disease now than we had 50 years ago, period. So you can't convince me that our bodies as humans, we're just faulty. We're faulty humans, we're faulty beings, and we're just natural. Kids just naturally get cancer. You know, adults just naturally get cancer. They naturally get autoimmune diseases. That's not true.
Yeah.
And so we need to figure out what maybe, you know, this is the big, like, what if all of the chemicals that we're giving our kids and our patients and people are contributing to all of these horrible chronic diseases? Maybe it's not our fault. They try to pin it on people. Oh, your diet, or you smoke, or you're overweight. No, it wasn't like this 50 years ago. And that's where we have to get into big pharma and all of the medications that people take. The amount of medications that I saw in children is immense. And I know when you get into adulthood, it becomes a laundry list. You know, it's not uncommon for someone to be on 10 different medications. It's not uncommon for a child to come into a specialist on 4 to 5.
Yeah.
And so then you have interactions. Everything interacts. You have chemicals and medications interacting with vaccines, and that's where their out is, because we're bombarded from every side with all these horrible chemicals and food additives, which I have to add in because it's the Food and Drug Administration, right?
Absolutely.
And so, you know, that was another wake up where, you know, I'm looking at the bag of Takis that I'm like feeding my kid every day for a month because he loved them. And it's like the last chemical in Takis, I think it's THT or something, TCA. Anyway, the you guys, everyone look it up. You look it up, it says antioxidant. That antioxidant is not one of the heart healthy antioxidants. That's an antioxidant for paint thinner and for varnish. It's a chemical, it's used in to keep preserve paints. And so then you look that up. It's just easy Google search. It's toxic, it's cancerous, and it even kills plants. You're not supposed to use it on plants. And so that's in Takis. That was approved. And guess what, folks? You can, and this is why it's, you know, I'm glad that I'm able to research this stuff now, because I never had time to do this before. You know, there's stuff that's natural that preserve food. There's herbs. And sometimes you can get a real, you know, if you go to Whole Foods or your local expensive food store, you see the preservatives, rosemary extract, I believe is one of them. That preserves foods. You don't need chemicals. And so people need to wake up to the fact that the same organization that's approving that for your kid to intake every day is approving medicines and is approving vaccines. So they have the liability problem, not me.
Yeah, it's because they're cheaper, right? And that's what it boils down to, is they're willing to weigh your safety, the very group, right, that are supposed to, you know, it's incredible the conflicts of interest we see. And I would argue that definitely, and I think you, I mean, you meant that, I'm sure you would say the same, is that there are, you know, if somebody gets, there are like organic or natural cases of something happening with somebody, but it's always a sign of a problem, right? Like your point is, you don't just happen to get it one day. It's because there's an issue. Something caused it. Your body's recognizing a problem, and that's the reaction to something like that. And that's right. The idea is that we don't look at it like that. And that's what's so broken. And I think that when you talk about the multiple vaccines, that's so incredibly important that we don't, I mean, our doctors will tell you not to mix certain medications because of dirt and side effect, but we don't even consider that with something you pump into your child's arm when they're born. That's crazy to me. And that's one thing that people with any number of groups over even recent history have been saying, look, we need to test against, you know, these against each other. We need to test vaxxed people against unvaxxed people. And they just refuse to do it. Ask why that is.
And you have to ask why it is, and you have to see the billions of dollars tied to this. And I'm sorry, and I'm not saying that your pediatrician or your doctor is a bad person, but I can tell you the people that are making this stuff are bad people. Well, they're only out for money, okay? They don't have our health into consideration. And what I find really evil at this point is when a parent has that conversation, or they want to just talk about it. It's like they're shamed into even not having the conversation. And that's not right. It's not, a parent should be able to talk about this. Someone who doesn't want vaccines shouldn't be shamed. Okay. Besides the fact that the majority of the illnesses in the vaccines are not rampant, half of them are curable. You know, it's like, it's insane. And it takes, you know, sitting down with families and hearing from parents that have had adverse reactions occur from vaccines, where it's just heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. And they all say the same thing. They would have never done it if they had known the possibilities, and they weren't told.
Back informed consent, exactly what we're talking about, you know, and it's the pressure there is really sickening to think about, that these people are being pressured even by their doctors into socially acceptable actions for what we just made clear, I think, is tying back to financial and professional motivations, which is just really gross when you think about what it's translating into. But let's talk about for a moment a different subject here. Something that I think relates to the bigger topic, and then we can finish off with something again that I think really ties into your specialty. But you had some discussions of the PCR test that really stood out to you, that I think, again, and this is what's so crazy about this discussion in of itself, is this is something that, you know, we're speaking with a medical professional here, so his opinion absolutely matters on this stuff. But I think that the average person today is waking up to the reality of something that should not be allowable, something that's clearly questionable, that seems to be dictating every action they take. So what are your thoughts on this PCR test, and, you know, what makes you feel that you need to talk about it?
I do want to back up one second, because this is part of the reason that I'm writing now, and I wrote a book. It's that I want to explain to people that that medical training is, in medical training, we are not taught to even think this way. So from day one, you're taught that CDC, FDA, all these, this is God. You know, if the stuff comes down from them, it is correct. Because I worry about, I honestly worry in the next 6 months to a year when people realize that these organizations might not have your best interests at heart. I do want them to know that there is a bit of brainwashing that occurs in medical school and training, and it is hammered. The societies hammer you into thinking that you're doing good. So do I think that there are a lot of health professionals that are good people and want to do good? I really do. They need to wake up now, because I think the evidence is starting to grow. But these are not, I'm not in the camp where, oh, every doctor is just out to harm people and make money. Right. I don't believe that. I believe they're in control. They're controlled by billion-dollar corporations that they work for. They're just slaves.
Yeah. Well, I would argue the there in any premise, it's never that broad. It's always, there's always, you know, more nuance in between it. And I think historically speaking, from my opinion, I think it's very clear that these companies and these entities do not have your health, at least as their primary objective. But within there, there's always individuals that may just be brainwashed, as you're talking about.
Yeah. And so, you know, so it ties. So with someone that's just thinking, oh, this is all crazy. All right. Okay, fine. Then so we have the CDC that is that's running our lives right now, not just the CDC here, but the health departments in the UK, you know, they're all talking, they're all doing the same thing. And so there's a document, the CDC, it's interesting because they tell us the truth. You know, I don't know if it's like a get out of jail free card, but they're telling us the truth here, folks. And the document is PCR testing. So the PCR test that we're using to control the world, to lock down the entire world, the inventor of the PCR test has gone public saying that it is not a viral test. This is a process. He got a Nobel Prize because of the process of amplification of DNA. It's not meant to identify viruses. And then the CDC releases one in April and another one in July, their testing manual, the PCR testing manual, okay? And it states on there, it says it, read it for yourself. It says that you cannot, this test does not distinguish, it does not distinguish between COVID-19 and any other viruses and or bacteria. When I read that, I lost it. They're saying right now that this test detects DNA, which they amplify, they multiply it and they amplify it and they turn it up. And they get to choose, is it 20 times, 30 times, 50 times? They get to choose when a positive test pops up. This document is telling you that they're shoving something way back in your nose, into your sinuses, that we all have bacteria in our nose. We have bacteria in our skin. And they're saying that this test, that the PCR test that is ruling our lives, all of these cases right now, are positive, could be positive because of bacteria DNA, bacterial DNA that is in your nose or other viruses. That's insane.
Yeah.
This should be headline news tonight. This should be all over.
Yeah.
We're using a test that doesn't detect, that isn't specific for COVID-19.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if this, I thought this was the one you were referencing. I'm sorry, this wasn't the correct one, but you're definitely right. And I think it's so interesting that at the,
okay.
This is the one you mentioned before. We can talk about this next. But the point was that the threshold by a lot of multiple experts, including one that I keep referencing that had used these PCR tests in regard to genetic material with muscles, has spoken out as well, saying, look, I got incredible amounts of false positives, but he still thought that there was use for it and used it and, you know, so on, but thought it was unrealistic to be using it for this purpose. And so it's incredible that we continue to see this at the threshold that I think is, you know, I mean, I think the argument is about 30 or below is where it needs to be. And they're somewhere at like 45. That's the general discussion I was hearing. And that they will end up, they cannot decide that with the test they're using, they cannot show whether or not you're actually infectious, whether or not you actually have enough of the virus to where it's even showing symptoms or you will ever show symptoms, right? So and then you add the false positive on top of that, you know, it's incredible. But this is something that Dr. shared with me before we started that I've shared on the show a couple times. And again, this was the document from the CDC, actually on the FDA website from the CDC, which says quite plainly that this sense no qualified a virus isolates of the 2019 COVID are currently available.
So they took a guess. Yeah, there's no isolated virus that they have made these tests on. But it's about, I think it's like the second page of this same, I don't know if you're, this
oh yeah, yeah, here.
But the, now maybe go.
Give me a word, I can search for it.
Cannot distinguish between.
Doesn't seem like it's popping up. It's okay. I'll include this for them to check out in the show notes.
But it does say in this same article that it does not. It says it in black and white, cannot distinguish between other viruses or bacteria. So they're saying it can't distinguish between other viruses or bacteria. Yeah, right here. But does not rule out bacterial infection or co-infection with other viruses.
That's incredible. So they mentioned that in regard to the common cold as well, right? So you could have a false positive if you ever had the cold, which is a coronavirus. You know?
You could have any. You could. Have, I mean, there's you know, many, many viruses that are passed around. This test picks up all of them. Okay, and it picks up bacteria, which is in your nose anyway. So it wasn't a fluke. You know, when you saw that story, I don't know, can't remember what African country got all these tests, and you know, they test a papaya or something. Yeah, you could test a papaya. There's papayas that could be positive because they probably have staph on it from you touching it.
Right.
This is in it. So right here, this just breaks down the entire narrative. And if we really want to be forthright and scientific, you know, this should be Koch's postulate. We should be able to. Koch's postulate means that if we identify, so we've had almost a year now to identify this disease and this death from coronavirus 19, you should be able to isolate the virus, grow the virus, and then put it in something and cause a disease. That's what Koch's postulate is. They haven't even isolated the virus.
Right.
We're all going based on what we think the DNA is.
And that's what these two things are we're showing you, is that they essentially scraped material from, I believe, someone's lungs in China, and ever since then have been claiming that's what this thing is. And we've never even proven, as the doctor's saying, what this actually is based on the gold standard, which is Koch's postulate, which is just incredible to me. But it's
so there's rap. So the next step is, I just saw this the other day, there's another test out. Now this is the take-home one, or the one that they're handing out like candy, that's saliva. Because even my kids ask, like, why do you have to put it, if it's so infectious, why not just spit on something? Right. If it's so infectious, why do you have to get at your like posterior turbinate of your nose that can cause injury?
Which they have already too, and I've seen examples of that.
Yeah, so that doesn't make any sense. It should be in easily front of the nose or saliva. So there's a new test out. And the new test says that it can detect coronavirus DNA in your spit. And it's claiming, it's tested, it's only 60 people, 60, 30 subjects, 30 and 30. It's claiming it's 100% accurate, 100%. And I read this one, I'll send it to you after the show. It said 100% accurate at detecting coronavirus infection. And so I'm thinking to myself, well, how do you know the person had coronavirus? So you used a PCR test to detect that the person had coronavirus. And then now you're saying, which first of all, the whole thing smelled of total BS, because no test is 100% effective.
Exactly.
They're claiming 100%. They were like 30 was positive. Yep, we got 30 were negative. We got I mean, it looks like a made up study to me. It's incredible. But this is the next round, by the way, people. Oh, you don't like the thing up your nose? Okay, let's just start passing out these tests where it's something DNA.
Any honest scientist or even a mathematician can tell you that it's ignorant to claim that anything is 100%. And yet we have this entire scientific community, so we're told, and this consensus, all nodding along with something that their entire careers have told them is not even, like, that's just such a joke. And somebody made a great reference about the PCR testing for the very thing that it's supposed to confirm. The analogy is that's like using a pregnancy test to decide if a pregnancy test is accurate. It doesn't make any sense.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so, I think that just to boil it down to Because I think sometimes when you get into the research and when you know too much information, you start to lose people. But what my goal is, and this is part of my life goal at this point, I would rather do this. I can save more people doing this than what I was doing before. It's to be able to boil this down to the common person. And the common person needs to figure out that these very trusted organizations that have been running healthcare in our country for over a century, they're wrong. Like, not only they're wrong, they're giving us false information. You need to question this. And I'm sorry, it takes doing your own research. You're not going to hear it. You're not going to hear it on the news. And the only thing that you're hearing right now is Dr. Atlas, you know, and that's getting politicized because he's tied with a candidate. Okay. You know what you can do? You can also Google, you can search all the doctors. You know, I'm not the only person saying this. There's not many people here, but Germany, UK, Ireland, they have a consortium of doctors, and you can call them all crazy, but there's a consortium of doctors, epidemiologists, PhDs, incredibly smart people. They're going so far as to say there is no pandemic right now.
Right.
And they're publicly saying there's no pandemic now. In Ireland, the epidemiologist that I can't recall her name, but
Cahill, right? Cahill?
Yes, yes. They're you know, they're all these records, you guys, anyone that's putting down coronavirus as a diagnosis, these are all going to be looked at. It's going to take a while, but they've already gone through them over there. And I mean, I think she was like March through May, or they had just picked 3 months in the height of it, and they had found no true coronavirus death. They were all from comorbidities.
That's incredible.
And that country is currently being, you know,
right, locked down again at this point, right? That's actually, it's just unbelievable. I mean, even if the spike, and the idea that they can then point to the cases with no deaths is staggering, yeah. But then say, oh, well, but these few deaths we had, even then, we're not even about it exactly, but still we're going to lock you down. I think it was in New Zealand's been pretty bad. There's another place I just saw that basically said, oh, we're going to shut down preemptively. I know there's no problem now, but we're going to get ahead of it. And it's like, oh my gosh.
Can we talk about influenza numbers too?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Okay, so and this is something else that woke me up at the very beginning, and this is stuff from the CDC. This wasn't Twitter world or whatever you want. This was information coming from the CDC, and the CDC at the height of this, as the coronavirus cases increased, influenza decreased. It almost disappeared. And I recall, you know, I'm taking this to people that I think are going to figure it out. I'm like, hey, just second look at this. I'm trying to be neutral. Take a look at this. And it was like deer in headlights. You know, so right currently, so that was back then. Now, we're currently at a 98% reduction of influenza deaths worldwide. And that's World Health Organization stats. Okay, I think the CDC has stopped counting influenza deaths. Their influenza reporting system is turned off.
Yeah, I was actually just looking for the link for it, actually, so I could show it. But I just showed this on a different show where they have openly said this now. And not only that, but that they're suspending it for 2021. To 2021, but they've also for this whole time, and I've been showing this since the beginning, have been blending, as they have long before with the flu, pneumonia and flu and all these other things in their mortality numbers, which is not accurate.
And it said it, and they said it in their documents. They told the truth in their documents. They said the cases that we're talking about include coronavirus, influenza-like illness, and bacterial pneumonia. You know why I know that? Because it's ICD-10 codes. And that's what they are. They are going off ICD-10 codes, which is all billing from hospitals. And if you had any of those, they were counting you as a coronavirus death. That's their own words. This isn't conjecture. That's where, you know, early on, I just don't get it, why people aren't like, this is a we should be marching on CDC. Someone needs to answer these questions.
Well, what I've been saying from the very beginning in this is that, look, like even the idea of the, you know, being liberal with the numbers, that as Dr. Burke said, you know, the idea that we're doing it for your safety, like, fine, I could even get on board with the overcompensation just to be safe, but you then can't use those numbers to lock us down and force you to wear a mask because you just told us that you're being wildly, I mean, that's incredible to me that they can admit that it's inaccurate and then use those numbers to actually force you to do things that are illegal. And I mean,
and then you need to tell, then you need to explain, okay, fine. You need to explain why the overall death count 2018 to 2019 is more, the same or more than this year. And don't tell me it's because of lockdowns and masks, because we still touch everything and we still pass money and we still go to the grocery store. We've done nothing really different. And that's the crazy part. When you look at the numbers, the total death toll in the United States 2 years ago compared to this year is the same. And then you can add on just a little bit of, you know, a hypothesis here. Do you think that we've had increase in drug use, suicide, cancer because people can't go to their doctor? Do you think we've had an increase in death, depression? We know we've had increase in death in elderly.
Right.
So even with the increase in death, the total death count for the United States is the same. So, they have explained to, not me.
Right,
they
exactly.
Okay, there's the data. Walk me through it. I want to believe you.
Yeah.
You know?
It's pretty obvious, you know. I mean, there's a few different places I've seen are beginning to point this out, that the numbers are pretty much in line with everything from before. And that's, again, it's so glaring how you just stop reporting on the flu and then you can just make these numbers somewhere else or even just blend them together for your safety. You know, there's all these excuses they're using, but at the end of the day, it amounts to a situation where I think it's very apparent that we're not in a pandemic. And that's my opinion, but it's based on the actual official numbers from the CDC, the World Health Organization, HHS, right? Conspiracy theory.
Yeah. And explain to me why, you know, there's like Dr. Jensen, that I believe he's a congressman or senator. He came out with this and almost got his medical license taken away. I need you to explain to me, CDC, why you sent to the hospitals a document telling physicians who have been doing death certificates a certain way for 100 years, why you sent that to hospitals and said to alter it.
Right.
To put it, to label these patients as coronavirus deaths, if they have a positive test or if they're presumed, you could even presume. There's so many things that they need to answer for.
Yeah.
Fine. I'll hold my judgment back, but these things need to be answered.
And it was shameful the way that they treat, I mean, regardless of what you think about Jensen or his practice or as an individual or what he said, what they did to him is absolutely disgusting, because all he did was speak up about what he believed, what he thought was the case, and he proved everything he said. And yet, as you said, he's still being attacked as far as I can tell. I mean, on a personal level, think about how shameless that is and how shameful that is about where we are right now. You know, it's just very disgusting. And yeah, the flu numbers are something we need to continue to pay attention to, because that's going to continue to show. But at the same time, remember that even something like that is easily, if we're talking about entities that are lying to this degree, what's the difference about just making up a bunch of numbers for something else? We should be questioning everything, as my tagline is, in regard to all of these people indefinitely, because they have obvious political motivations here. And speaking of something of the motivations and what you were just talking about before, all the stuff we talked about, informed consent and so on, I wanted to end today with asking you about something that I think has been really sticking out in my mind from the very beginning. And this is this discussion of ground glass opacity in the lungs. That was one of the first things that everybody is looking at this weird new thing. And it was very clear that it was, you know, that signifies COVID-19. That was the big push in the beginning. Mm. Until I argue they started discovering that exact same symptom on things that were happening back in 2019 around the United States. And then we just seemingly stopped discovering it in people's lungs. So I want to know whether or not what you think about that, and where did the whole ground glass opacity symptom go? And then let's talk about ventilators as well and how that affects the lungs, and you know, the whole aspect of that's another aspect that I think has been whether you're talking informed consent or just hurting people based on bad information. Yeah. It's where we are.
Well, it's interesting, in 2019 and before that, you know, we had this little, I don't want to call it epidemic, but we had an increase in cases of vaping injuries. And that's where I recall seeing these ground glass opacities. Mm-hmm. It was vaping injuries. And that's very prevalent. So it was kids, you know, I was seeing kids, but there were kids and adults that were healthy and then coming into the hospital really sick. Some of them needing ventilation, but, and they would do a CAT scan of their lungs and this ground glass appearance of the CAT scan was occurring, which just means like super inflammation, lots of inflammation. That dropped off around the time of the epidemic. Okay. So I'm pretty sure everyone's still vaping. I don't know what happened with that.
Good point. Probably wasn't vaping is what that seems to signify. It's a guess, but you know.
Yeah. So, you know, it is interesting. I don't know the exact cause of this ground glass opacity, whether it is really coronavirus or it's something else that's unidentified. I do know that the patients that were sick, they were very sick with coronavirus that go from being healthy to struggling, air hungry, oxygen, you know, needing tons of supplemental oxygen. And I noticed this early on. You know, I'm not an ICU doc, but I did tell a few of my friends that I know. I said, hey, this seems, you know, if someone's healthy and they get a disease and you can't ventilate them and they're intubated and you just can't, the ventilator's not working, that means you're pushing air in and out. You're giving adequate oxygen. You're taking out good CO2. There's something with the exchange. Okay, so you could argue, is it inflammatory? Are the alveoli so inflamed that the oxygen can't get through? You could argue that steroids would have worked in that case, which at the beginning, by the way, they said absolutely no steroids. That was ridiculous. Steroids were horrible. And then at the end or towards the middle end, they said, oh, no, use steroids. We could have used nebulized steroids. If they wanted us to do that at the very beginning, there's easy treatments. You could just use nebulized steroids or they can inhale steroids to the lungs. So the other thing, though, that it makes sense to me, if you're, you know, you can be really, really sick. You can have, you know, 15% of your lung function and be put on a ventilator and kept alive. If you're being put on a ventilator and dying, it can't all be just lung. It has to be circulatory too. And so all of our little alveoli are wrapped with capillaries. And so common sense, again, well, common medical sense from the pulmonary world, I said, that has to be a coagulation issue. So is there something in this disease process that causes a hypercoagulation state so that it's not like a pulmonary embolism is like a big clot, but it's microvascular. And so that was early on. I said that nobody really did anything. Now what they're doing is putting people on anticoagulants, and that seems to be helping. But that's how they ended up killing a bunch of people. They ignored the basic physiology. They should have tried that. There's nothing, it wouldn't have hurt. So I think now if someone's on, you know, if someone's sick, I mean, gosh, even just taking an aspirin or something, putting them on something that's going to counteract this coagulation that's happening within the totally fine, tiny little capillary beds in your lungs, that could be a big, I mean, I think that's been a big help too. That may be, you know, part of the decrease in death. So all the stuff they told us to not do, no steroids, they weren't doing anticoagulants. Now they're doing, probably getting better, you know, outcomes.
That's interesting. Like I have to point this out every time. And again, whether it was just negligence, malfeasance, or a choice, it seems that this choice yet again led to more problems. Every single decision that I've seen made across this whole thing has led to an increase in issues that can be blended in with COVID-19. But now I wonder whether or not it's still an issue or not, because I have continued to see discussions of that where the ventilators aren't helping, but whether or not, who knows whether they're doing this, the thing you're talking about. And it's incredible to see things like this, that the politics seem to trump the discussion of whether or not this should be done or whether there's something else they could be doing. And it's so clear how politics played a role in this from the very, very beginning. And yeah, I wanted to note quickly on the vaping aspect, because that's something I've covered a lot on my show, is that we don't know for sure what it was, because even they admitted at the end that it turned out that they never even proved that it was in fact vaping that was causing this problem. Sure. But then you should also note that on the other side of the state, which is, we're talking Fort Detrick area in Maryland, you have this other area of a bunch of old folks' homes or convalescing homes that had an outbreak of what they ended up calling a cold outbreak. But of course, they all had ground glass opacity. And it was so interesting that you had all these weird outbreaks of the same exact symptoms, one, no vaping, and we never proved it, and then said, you know, but the point was that this was all happening. And then all of a sudden we have this out this, and Fort Detrick, by the way, right around that time frame had a contaminant leak, if you remember, and they had to shut down and no one ever explained it, national security, right? They worked on coronaviruses and bats and all this different stuff. You know, there's so many of these things that we don't talk about, but I think at the end of the day, what, like you were saying, there's a lot of questions and it's not for you and I to stand up and answer these. They should have already been answered by the authority and the people in these positions. I think it's clear that these entities, the CDC, the World Health Organization, even Health and Human Services, I don't think that they have our best interest at heart. And if they did, these would be things that would be open discussions at this point, you know?
Yeah. They would be having their own panels and discussing them, you know, with unbiased, looking at everything, but they're not. The only people that are doing it are politicians. And, you know, I agree. It's not, that's not the way to do it. They're supposed to be neutral. Where is the CDC? Where is the FDA? Where are these like trusted organizations that are having these panels and trying to tell us all this information without it coming from a reporter?
Yeah.
They can't discuss this stuff.
Did you hear in regard to the FDA, in regard to Operation Warp Speed and the vaccines, the FDA is not even allowed at the table. Wow. That's a fact. FDA is the one that put that out. So think about how, you know, the group that's supposed to be making sure we're safe and protected, they're like, we'll inform you. We'll let you know what's going on from our table. You know, there's so much of this happening, but you know, there's a lot we talked about today that really does show at the very least that there's honest questions that need to be addressed that aren't being addressed. And as a medical professional and someone who has a right to speak on these things, it's incredible that anybody, anywhere, regardless of what they know and what they've done, speaking on these kind of things gets shut down, gets disparaged by the journalists and the mainstream media. And that, I feel, shows you more than anything else the lack of discussion, you know? So thank you for being here and talking about this stuff with me. Maybe we can have you back on in a month or so and see where we are. Hopefully we're still here and able to do so. So any other comments or things you want to talk about before we go? And if not, any, you know, drop your social media links and everything else for us.
Sure. Yeah. No, I really appreciate you having me. And this just, you know, this all just comes from the heart. I don't have all the answers. I just want it, like you said, an open discussion. I want answers. My life has been affected. Everyone's life has been affected. We need this to stop. We need an answer and we need to figure this out. And I was saying this back in the summer, you know, are we going to go through this every winter? Like, that's all we're just trying. We're just trying to figure out how to live a normal life and, you know, geez, just get back to life. So I appreciate you having me on. I did, you know, I wrote a book, that I'd like to put out there. The book I wrote, it's my personal journey as a physician, being a younger person going through medical school. It details kind of how we are taught as physicians, which might give you a little, an inkling as to what's going on today, for sure. It's also, I dissect mass. I dissect all of the stuff that we talked about on the show today. I dissected. I also put it out there, again, what we talked about before, because I think there's a blowback coming, and I think there's a lot of good people in medicine. And what I want to distinguish is these good people in medicine are following the rules, and the rules that are set up them, they're set up to fail. And I want to give that perspective because a lot of people are going to be very angry. So it's called Dr. Q, Eyes Wide Open. It's on Amazon. I also have a Twitter handle. It's Dig Warrior 4 Kids, the number 4, DigWarrior 4 Kids on Twitter. I use my Twitter a lot to try to, and I don't get political. I just try to put out information to help people decide for themselves and wake up. So I implore you, my book is, it's a good eye opener. That's what the title. It's a good eye opener for people that have never questioned medical authority or medical professionals or the CDC and FDA. And it'll just kind of, I don't know, it kind of takes you from where we were to now and why we are here now.
Yeah, well, thanks.
It also talks about some cures too. I've done a lot. There's a lot of cool, we could do a whole nother show on potential cures that have already occurred and been shelved. Cancer cures, viral cures, you know, UV light for viruses, all this stuff.
That's incredible. It's so sad to see how much is suppressed that could be helping people. I don't know. Cannabis comes to mind. You know, cannabis, it's incredible.
Yes, yes. Frequency right. healing.
Yeah.
You know, there's been the amount herbal remedies for cancer. It's been discovered already. And the people were shut down. You know, there's really cool documentaries on it. But the indigenous people had cures, herbal remedies for many of the diseases we have now. But because they're not a drug that can be patented,
right?
You can't make money off it. So these people are either bought up, bought out, or shut up, and it's shelved. But the book also is of hope. So I always like to end on hope. I really believe we're going to get through this, and I think we're going to have so many incredible answers. I think we're going to learn a lot of bad things, but I think that we're going to have, this is going to force the powers that be to release the cures and to let us not demonize naturopaths or chiropractors or alternative medicine healers. This is where we're going. And so I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I couldn't agree more. And I wanted to add one more thing too, because I know it's always important to kind of preempt the kind of things that I already know people who seemingly their careers are to go after anybody who has the courage to speak out about these things, that I want people to realize that somebody writing a book in his position and getting it out in the world is no different than me writing articles on my website and getting it out in the world, right? People try to make it out to be like there's a profit motive or that kind of idea. The bottom line is we don't have the mechanisms that the mainstream do to get information out because right. They control it. So the point is that if you want to support him, check out his book. And by the way, I'll put all this in the show notes with your social media links and everything else, because that's the only mechanism we have is to do this ourselves. And that's exactly what the Last American Vagabond is. So thank you so much for being here. And everybody out there, as always, question everything. Oh, you know what? And I wanted to add too, just your hope. The point is that we need to continue to be positive about the direction we're going. I know this can be it can seem insurmountable. It can seem like there's no options, but the reason it's bad is because they know they have to do it now, because there is an awakening happening and people are coming around to what's really the horrible things that are happening around them. And the reality is it's almost a positive note, because they're fighting back so aggressively, because we're that close to really making this difference. So just keep that in mind, guys. See that positive change. So as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks. You're sure of it? Because people are listening really closely to this.
Right now, people should not be walking. There's no reason to be walking around with a mask. When you're in the middle of an outbreak, wearing a mask might make people feel a little bit better, and it might even block a droplet, but it's not providing the perfect protection that people think that it is.